From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. A new campaign is urging parents to spend more time reading with their kids, and Kansas City is at the front of this push for early childhood education. This hour, Kansas City Mayor Sly James and a representative from the U.S. Department of Education join us to discuss what cities can do to promote early learning for kids. Later, we'll talk with Mayor James about what the situation in Ferguson means for Kansas City residents. We'll also take a look at some economic and development issues facing the city. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kansas City Mayor Sly James has been talking to African Americans lately about a very specific question. What am I supposed to do if I'm stopped by the police? In the wake of Ferguson, that's a question that's drawing a lot of interest. The mayor's in the house to talk about that later on this hour. First, though, the mayor and a top official from the Department of Education are hosting a community conversation in town today on ways to up the focus on early childhood education. The thinking, everybody has to do more, cities, states, and the federal government. Mayor, welcome back. Always good to have you here.
It's great to be here, Steve.
And with the mayor is Dr. Libby Doggett. She's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy and Early Learning at the Department of Education. And Libby, welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here with the mayor in Kansas City.
Oh, good deal.
Amen. Well,
Secretary Doggett, let me begin with you here. You say everybody has to do more when it comes to early childhood education. Like what? What do you have in mind?
Well, the first 5 years of a child's life are the most important years. They build a learning foundation that will last through school and last a lifetime. We've ignored those years in this country, and I think there's a renewed focus on them, but we can't do this alone. The federal government's got to put in more money, more resources, more interest. The state government has got to do more, and the city's got to do more, and today we're celebrating what the city's already doing.
But Madam Secretary, the country has been talking about early childhood education for years here. Everyone recognizes it's important. Why do we still have to put the spotlight on it if we all agree it's a very big deal anyway?
I think it's just been that there's a difficulty getting the resources. It's not a matter of just saying it's important. It's a matter of doing it. We need some action. And frankly, cities and states have been short of funds to put in. The federal government has been short. And we've got to figure out, even given a shortage of funding, what we can do. And we also need to do a better job with the resources we have, and we've got to get parents to step up and make a better use of the time they're spending with children and ask them actually to spend a little bit more time.
Mayor, what's been happening in Kansas City on this front? Because I know you've been very involved with something called the Turn the Page Initiative, aimed at ensuring that every third grader in town can read at or above grade level by the time they end the third grade. So what's Kansas City doing, and what does it need to be doing in addition to that?
Well, let me go back just a moment, if I could, to the other question about funding and what we need to do. Yes, there's been funding shortages, but there's also been a lack of prioritization. We don't seem to have any problem funding prisons, but we do have a problem funding things that might keep people out of prison. And that kind of goes to me, that kind of wait until you're actually sick to go to a doctor syndrome, as opposed to being healthy and well and doing preventative things at the upfront. Better investment on the front end than the back. What we've been trying to do through Turn the Page is to bring together all of those folks that we can possibly get our hands on that are interested in this whole area of making sure the kids are reading at third grade level, making sure that they're prepared to go to school in a good way, that they're kindergarten ready, making sure that they attend school once they get there. So we're working with groups like the Family Conservancy, our partner in the Talk, Read, Play initiative today, and with the U.S. Department of Education and the state, DESE, everybody that we possibly can to focus like a laser on those things that are going to address that 0 to 5 year time period in a child's life. If we can get a better handle on that, we'll have better prepared students, we'll have better citizens at the end.
So are you saying we're already doing it then? Do you have to do something more, or are we already where we have to be?
We're in infancy as far as I'm concerned. We have, I'm sorry to say, a shameful record of only educating, having preschool, quality preschool education available for 1% of the four-year-olds in the state of Missouri. 1%.
Wow.
Other states are far beyond that. 1%. That's not an emphasis on education. But we don't focus on that. We're not prioritizing it. The problem is that we know from the data and the facts and the research that's been out there for decades that investments in early childhood education is a hugely smart investment.
Yeah.
And yet we fail to do what we know we need to do.
So you're saying we have this program, the Turn the Page initiative, but it needs to be bigger, more kids involved, more people involved in it.
I think, yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Turn the Page. We act as an umbrella organization in a lot of ways. But what we really need is we need everybody to understand, parents, teachers, librarians, whoever, to understand that, first of all, this needs to be a city of readers, and it needs to be a city that understands the connection between parents talking, reading, and playing with their children every day, and closing that 30 million word gap that lower-income kids have versus upper-middle-income kids by the time they're 3 years old.
Yeah. Well, Secretary Doggett, then, what's holding Congress back? I assume there's bipartisan interest in doing something like this. What's the issue? This is Apple, you know, America and apple pie and everything else, isn't it?
Well, I think the mayor made a good point. It's a matter of priorities. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a priority for children in Congress right now. I don't think there's much going on in Congress. And that's why we've been looking at states and at cities. States and cities have decided we can't wait for Congress to act and we need to do more. And so we have a number of states around the country that have put major new funding in. The mayor mentioned Alabama. Alabama put $10 million in to build their preschool program. They're going to be reaching almost 10% of Alabama's four-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty incredible. Then we have states like West Virginia and Oklahoma that offer pre-K for every single four-year-old in the state.
Wow.
So we have states that have really moved forward and that are shining lights, and we need to do more in Missouri for our preschool children. The Turn the Page program is great. The Talk, Read, Play program is wonderful, too. But we need a whole continuum because there's 5 years, and it's not just one program that will meet the needs of all the children.
Well, Secretary Doggett, tell us why you're here today, because Kansas City was chosen as one of 14 cities by your department and the National League of Cities to host these community conversations on the ways to improve schools through this early childhood education you're talking about here. You just spoke at the Kauffman Center this morning about all of this. Why was Kansas City picked to host this conversation, and what's happening with that today?
It's a pretty exciting partnership with the National League of Cities leading it with the Department of Education. We were looking for cities that had leadership. Where are some cities where the political elected officials have an interest in early childhood? And that was clearly Kansas City with Mayor James's interest in this. The Kauffman Foundation has funded early learning for a long time. You have a business community that's starting to step up. And you've pulled together, I think, over 50 organizations that are working on Turn Their Page.
Wow.
So we think we have momentum here in this city that's pretty unmatched around the country.
But again, Mayor, the question on the table here is this matter of priorities.
Yes.
If you were to say, I want to cut the police department by 20% to put more money into something like this, that would be a tough trick to turn, I imagine, for you.
It would be, and it's not exactly what I would want to do, because I don't want to have people trying to make a decision. Do I want to have my kids educated, or do I want them to be safe?
Yeah.
What we really need to do is we need to realize that things are costing more these days, and sometimes we need to step up and pay more. Dr. Doggett said earlier today, 71% of America's people believe in more money being spent for early childhood education. I believe that they're willing to step up and pay for that. The citizens of Kansas City have shown time and time again that when they're convinced that something is helpful, they'll pay for it. We can reorganize some things in the city, but the bottom line has to be that there's going to have to be a community-wide effort, including funding, in order to get this done. But the first thing that I want to do is I'd rather get our state legislature to step up and recognize the value of this investment long term for the benefit of this entire state and the people who work and live and play here, to make an investment themselves to show that they're serious about education. Every session they talk about education, and every session they leave having done not much. You know, when we're cutting taxes for corporations and others who really could get along without the cuts, we ought to use that money for early childhood education. Those corporations would be far better off as long as they are building citizens who actually make enough money to buy their goods and services.
Well, what do you think is holding back the right honorables in Jefferson City from doing just what you mentioned? What's the issue here?
Partisan politics and ideologies interfere with common sense a lot of times. Mm. You know, there are some things that certain people won't do simply because other people have proposed that it be done. If you rename, I mean, I was struck by the thing about do you like Obamacare or do you like the Affordable Care Act? And people said, I like the Affordable Care Act, but I don't like Obamacare. You know, it's those types of things and processes in people's minds these days that poison the well. You know, and it doesn't matter if the Pope arrived in Kansas City in a stolen car, he's still the Pope. Let's deal with the issue instead of all the political trappings and recognize what we need to be doing for our kids and our cities.
We're talking this morning on Up to Date about early childhood education. Our guest, Mayor Sly James from Kansas City, Dr. Libby Doggett, who's with the Department of Education. So, Dr. Doggett, you're here today. And then you're gone. And then so what happens after you leave? What needs to happen in Kansas City to propel this conversation forward and to achieve some of the objectives you're talking about here today?
Well, in Washington, we don't think the best ideas are there in Washington, but they're out in the community. So that's one of the reasons I'm here, is I'm here to talk a little bit about what other states and cities are doing. But most importantly, I'm here to learn. And I have learned that you do have the political will here. You do have Turn the Page, and now you have Talk, Read, and Play. You have a number of school districts that are looking at preschool. There are other pieces that need to be in place, and I think that we now have the majority of the leadership in this city that realize they've got to do more, and by coming together, they will. This is not a short-term solution. There's not a short-term solution. This is going to take a decade or more to put the pieces in place to really make a difference for our youngest children.
And when you go back to Washington, you'll file a report and you're going to say, what do you want to see happen in the next year or two, again, to continue this momentum?
We want to provide whatever support we can at the Department of Education for Kansas City, because mm-hmm. we want to go where there is energy, where there is interest, and not wait around for other cities that don't want to work. So we'll be waiting for opportunities to help. There's a new competition called the Preschool Development Grants that we are hoping that the state of Missouri applies for. It's $250 million. It's a small down payment on the President Obama's vision. The president wants to put $75 billion into early childhood over 10 years. That's what we really need to do. We need to be looking at a long-term, large solution. But in the short term, we have this preschool development grant competition. I'm hoping that Missouri applies and that some of that money could help fund some of these services.
So that's a statewide grant proposal you're looking at there? I mean, if Missouri gets it, it would be spread out throughout the entire state?
No, it would be sent to one or two communities that really want to use it and make the most of it.
So, Mayor James, I gather you want one of those grants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plus, you know, it's unfortunate that we did not do those types of things that were necessary to apply for other funding opportunities. But this one is something that we can do without having done that groundwork. So we're going to be very aggressive in pursuing it, and we'll work with the governor and DESE in order to try to get that done.
You know, Mary, you have your own story about the importance of reading in your life, and it involves someone named Doc Savage and the Doc Savage books. Tell us about sneaking off at night to do a little reading and what that was all about for you as a little boy here in Kansas City.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was, we had a small house over on 44th and Montgall, and I was the oldest of three boys at the time, living in a small bedroom, and they were always kind of a pain. So basically, my parents would work and come home, and we had eaten, then they'd go to bed. My two brothers, LaVance and LaFrance, were always making noise. So
Vance and LaFrance?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah,
okay.
Seriously.
And that's fine. I'm just clarifying.
Yeah.
It's a
very long story.
Yeah.
Even stranger than you might think. But
not sure I want to know. Not sure I need to know.
But yeah. my respite from all of that was I would go sit on the attic steps, and there was this door at the top, and I'd open it up, and I'd prop a flashlight in there, and I'd sit there, and I'd read Doc Savage novels and pretend that I could actually turn out to be a Doc Savage.
Who was Doc Savage? Remind our listeners who he was.
Doc Savage was this guy who did not have superpowers, but he had honed his body to the highest possible fitness. Every sense was extraordinary. He was brilliant in all these different sciences and medicine and this and that. He was the smartest man on the planet, and he had millions and billions of dollars that had been left to him by his rich explorer father, and he went out and hired these experts like Monk, who was a chemist, but he was called Monk because he had a lot of hair on his body.
Yeah.
And then there was Long John, who was kind of a prissy Englishman and had a cane, but he was a chemistry expert or whatever. And they went out and solved these problems and wrestled with monsters in the Sargasso Sea, wherever the heck that is.
The Sargasso Sea.
Yeah, there's all sorts of...
Just over there by Maine, I think, that was out there. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. It was probably over by where the Penn Valley Park is now.
We're talking about early childhood education, and we're wondering how important that is for you and your family, what you're doing in your household to address early childhood education. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Secretary Doggett, you have your own coming-of-age story about the importance of early childhood education. You got it while volunteering in a Head Start classroom as an undergrad at the University of Texas. Tell us about your own experience. There.
Back in the dark ages when I was in the University of Texas, I did go out every week to volunteer in a brand new Head Start program on St. John's area of Austin and learned so much from the program, from the teachers, from the children. But it really wasn't until my senior year when I was about to go student teach in Spanish and French. Dual major in Spanish and French, that I realized that what I was really interested in were very young children. I can remember exactly where I was sitting and exactly what I felt in this just joy that all of a sudden I knew what I wanted to do. And so then I had to go figure out, you know, where are these courses? And at that time, they were over in home ec. So I went over to the home ec department and talked them into letting me take every course they had in child development that semester,
wow,
even though I didn't have the prerequisites. And then I was really on my way, and really at that point, anytime I went back to school, concentrated on that early learning, those early learning years, and have done that ever since.
Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Does Kansas City offer you the kinds of early childhood education possibilities and options that you'd like to see in our town? Again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Sharon from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to say that I'm training my dog. He already has a good canine citizen certification, but I'm doing Pets for Life, and then I will be doing the reader dog, where we take the dogs into the classrooms, usually about third grade, and let the children read to the dogs. The dogs can't talk out loud, and the children aren't being stopped every step of the way to correct their pronunciation, and it gives them more courage to read and really helps them a lot. And my dog is so cuddly and adorable, but he's not a sloppy kisser.
All right. Sharon, thank you very much. I appreciate
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Leslie from Kansas City, Missouri. Leslie, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if the mayor had any opinion on the intergenerational programs that are coming into vogue now, where programs are approaching both the child and the parent to help break that cycle of intergenerational poverty.
We've talked a little bit about that on this show. It's a good question, Leslie. Mayor James, what about that?
Well, absolutely. I think too often in this society we let those lines that commonly divide us, whether it's the generation gap or the age or the income gap or the racial gaps or whatever kinds of gaps divide us, when we can start bridging some of those things and combining people, the understanding that occurs on both sides is absolutely tremendous. And so as we look at those things about bridging poverty and eliminating those types of problems, it is absolutely essential that we bring the young and the old, the mediums together and have those conversations. I happened to watch a movie that I taped on HBO. Can I say that on
sure.
on HBO the other day? The Butler. And it occurred to me that this man living his life from a childhood and coming full circle, meeting his child who had gone a separate way from him, finally had bridged their generational gap and their knowledge gap. Same thing happens with poverty, and it can happen in this city.
Secretary? Steve, I want to jump in. Leslie, that's a great point that you make, that we do need more intergenerational programs where we're looking at how can the parents do more, and then we're providing services for the kids. Obviously, the Turn the Page and the Talk, Read, Play are aimed at the parents and helping them have the supports they need to do a better job with their kids. And what we'd like to see is more preschool and higher quality child care. I also understand that in Missouri, we don't have a quality rating system that helps parents understand the quality of the care that their children are getting. And so that's something that every other state is moving forward in that area, and we'd like to see Missouri do the same.
You know, are there other programs, Madam Secretary, that you've seen around the country that you might recommend for Kansas City, programs that just seem to have taken off in one town or another for whatever reason? Does anything come to mind?
Well, I think the ones you have are good ones, and really they're in the infancy, and what you want to do is give them time to grow and develop. I don't think it's a matter of lots of programs. It's really a matter of taking what you have and making it work. So these are just getting started. Let's let them flourish.
Okay, back to some calls here. Let me go to Mary Ann from Kansas City, Missouri. Mary Ann, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, my comment, and I did tune in late, so I don't know if you've spoken about
shame on you, Mary Ann.
Pardon me?
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Okay, but I am a former parent educator. I worked in a diverse community in the St. Louis area when I did that, and I think it is the best resource that you can have. You get so much because parent educators do home visits with parents from the time their child is born until they're 3 years old. You give them advice about not just academic issues, but also safety issues and making sure that they get the health information that they need. It started in Missouri by Kit Bond.
I was going to say, Kit Bond started it. You bet he did.
Yes, he did. And the funding has been cut for that program. And I just think it's a shame because I know that I made a difference. I still sometimes run into families that I started with. It's rewarding as a career, and it really helps parents.
Well, Marion, I couldn't agree with you more. We had our oldest son. We had parents as teachers. Mm-hmm. Found out that he couldn't see worth a lick, and our parents as teachers woman, she recognized it and said, you ought to get him checked for glasses. And at 2 years old, he was wearing glasses and never took them off because he needed them so badly. What's happened to parents as teachers?
Well, I'm glad you brought up parents as teachers. And, Marion, thank you for being a parent trainer. The parents as teachers is one of the best programs in the country, and you have the best program in the States. Obviously, it is unfortunate that the funding has been cut, and we need to get that restored.
That's a national decision that's been made on?
No, it's been cut in the state.
In here.
We are fortunate that we have new funding for home visiting, so parents as teachers is not only growing a little bit in Missouri, but particularly is growing around the country.
Okay. I want to thank you both for coming in, and Mayor James is going to stick around with us a little longer. Dr. Libby Doggett, again, is Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy and Early Learning at the Department of Education. So nice to have you here, Libby. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve, so much.
And thank you very much, because it's not often that we get to have the country's leading expert on a subject come and spend time with us and help us out, and we very much appreciate it.
Well, Mayor, all eyes will be on Kansas City to watch what you and your community are doing around early learning. Thank you.
We won't let them down.
All right. Secretary Doggett, thanks again. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Kansas City and Ferguson. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's conversation with local singer-songwriter Gracie Schramm or our peek at the Paris of the Plains Cocktail Fest, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, we'll take a look at the KC Rep's new production of Our Town, and we'll examine a microloans program with a Kansas City councilman. Well, Mayor James is still with us. He just took part in a community forum this weekend at St. James United Methodist Church to help young African-American men be prepared for one question: what do I do when I'm stopped by the police? And, Mayor, thanks for sticking around. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
What advice did you offer young men and women, for that matter, in this community about what to do when they're stopped by a police officer?
Well, I was one of a number of different panelists, including a former judge,
yes,
several high-ranking police officials, and some state legislators. And the advice that seemed to be the most common is do what is requested of you. Do it without conflict, end the process as quickly as possible, and reserve any questions, if you absolutely have to ask them, until after you've already gotten through the process. Ask it politely and move on. The worst thing that you can do is to engage in a confrontation, because it's one that you're going to lose. And, you know, it's like I learned in the Marine Corps, you don't mess with the people who prepare your food, give you your shots, or, you know, those type, or issue your paycheck. Just do what you need to do, get it done, and then if you have a problem, go through the channels, make your complaint with the Citizens Complaint Board, and handle it that way.
You know, the fact that this is an issue speaks volumes about the racial divide in this country. It speaks volumes about what Ferguson has brought to the table, you know, for a lot of people. A lot of white folks don't understand that a meeting with a police officer on a street after 10 o'clock at night can be something to fear.
Well, yeah, and I want to be careful, and I want to say right up front, I work with the police department here in Kansas City, and I have a great deal of respect for the leadership and Daryl Forte and his deputy commanders and deputy chiefs, and for the officers who do their job. I also recognize, as a black man, that I have been pulled over and stopped for virtually no reason at all, and asked questions. I thought it was kind of interesting one occasion when I was pulled over and stopped. The first question wasn't, do you have a license and registration? The first question was, do you own this car? That happened, you know, and it's something, frankly, that unless you are a person of color, you don't experience. The people who stop, the majority people, are often of the same race. And it's kind of easier flowing in some instances. And again, not everybody is like this. It only takes a few officers to give everybody a bad name, and there are a few bad officers. But the bottom line is that traditionally, historically, chronically, consistently, and presently, African-American, Latino men stopped are not always treated with the same dignity and respect as others.
How much fear and concern is there, Mayor, in this community in the wake of Ferguson about the police, and what came out of the forum Saturday that maybe caught your attention a little bit?
A couple of things, I think. Then there is some fear, but not as much as others would like to. There's one thing that does bother me. It bothers me that there are some people who would like to stir that pot and take it to a boiling level for their own purposes. We cannot have that. It won't be tolerated. But the things that came out were there was anguish in some of the voices of the people who wanted to relate their personal stories about how they had been treated and how it affected them, their family, their children, who may have been in the car with them or who knew about it. The other thing that I thought was striking was that we had two police officers, high-ranking police officers, who stayed there as long as necessary to take personal information, answer questions. They were very blunt and realistic about their assessment. They agreed that some things needed to be done and changed. They did not fight it. They were open to having that conversation. That's what gives me hope. But, you know, I think there's a serious difference between us here in this city and Ferguson.
Because why?
Because I think I really give a lot of credit to Chief Daryl Forte, and by extension to the Board of Police Commissioners, for picking him. He has changed the way that this police department interacts with the public. That's a huge thing. If you act like an occupying army, you will be treated like an occupying army. If you act like a citizen who happens to be a police officer and is looking out for your welfare, then you'll be treated differently. We still have a long way to go in regaining that complete level of trust, but it's coming back. People are more receptive to the police officers. The police officers are more receptive to the people. That's a good thing. Secondly, Daryl Forte, I don't believe, would have ever handled a situation like Ferguson in the way that the Ferguson police handled it. There wouldn't have been this day-long hiding of information, this confrontational stuff, the release of video that was really irrelevant and designed to inflame, all of that. Daryl Forte would have been there within an hour of this incident, standing there answering questions and making sure that everybody knew what was going to happen, how it was going to proceed, and that it was under control. I also think that it does matter that in a situation like that, Daryl Forte, being an African-American man, would have had a level of credibility that they did not have in Ferguson. We need to be aware of those situations where there is such a divide between the community and the police department. That's where the tinderbox is, and that's where the match gets struck.
Mayor Sly James is my guest. You know, and yet, Mayor, the Star had a story yesterday about the amount of diversity inside area police departments. Kansas City has a 30% black population almost, and 12% of the members of its police department are black. That's not unusual for cities our size. But what do you make of it, and what needs to be done there? Because as a guy who came to this town in the mid-'80s and I covered police, I know this was a concern even back then many years ago.
Well, one of the things that impedes the ability to attract young African-Americans and Latinos into the police force is the fact that there is an inherent community distrust of the police force. So you're not going to voluntarily say in high school, I'm going to go be a cop, because in certain schools and environments, that's not really very cool. So you're not going to necessarily do it. You'll look for something else. You know, if you want to put on a uniform, then a lot of people go to the service as opposed to the police department instead. That's one thing. And I think that there's always just this basic problem of integrating minority races into traditionally majority established organizations, particularly those that are paramilitary, the police departments, fire departments, those types of things. I know when I was president of the Bar Association, we initiated a diversity initiative that went, and is still going to this day, funded by, managed by the managing partners of the largest law firms, all of which are Caucasian except for one, Maurice Watson, now, to increase diversity enrollment. We found that it was easier to recruit than it was to retain. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it was difficult to retain was because you've got to change the internal culture of the organization to be receptive to receiving new people in different cultures. If you don't do that, you're not going to keep them. Our police department and others have had similar situations and similar problems.
Again, our guest, Mayor Sly James, if you want to join our conversations, we talk here about Ferguson and could something like Ferguson happen here, 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. You know, a lot of people want to know, I guess this basic question, Mayor, could Ferguson happen in Kansas City? What do you say to that?
Ferguson can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
Circumstances are there. The racial tension is there. St. Louis has the Del Mar divide, north and south of Del Mar. Kansas City has Troost, east and west of Troost. Kansas City has a minority population that is still somewhat distrustful of the police. It's getting better. St. Louis and Ferguson certainly had that situation. Each have police departments that are majority white policing minority communities, although I think we're a little better and working towards it. It can happen anywhere. The things that we're trying to do to prevent it are exactly what we're trying to do now in terms of community policing, community outreach. The CAN Center down on the west side, now south.
The CAN Center is what?
Community Action Network, mm-hmm. where the police officers really do work with the community. They don't wear uniforms. They get to know the people. The people come up and talk to them like they're regular neighbors, and they are.
Yeah.
And they get to know them. So when they have a problem, they go to those guys and say, hey, can you help me? Or this guy over here is doing something wrong. And they work very closely. But see, the other interesting thing about that is a lot of police officers don't believe that's real policing. You know, real policing means you're putting handcuffs on somebody and dragging them to jail in some people's minds. So I appreciate and applaud the fact that we have a police department, at least some of our top echelon leaders and some of our officers recognize the value of that kind of close connected community policing that keeps issues and problems down so that there's not an immediate distrust.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Could something like Ferguson happen in Kansas City? That's the question on the table. 816-235-2888 is our number. Jim from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. And to address your question, I'm an African-American male over the age of 60. My feeling is that it is much less likely to happen here. But I also wanted to mention the irony of the fact that the mayor and Reverend Cleaver and many others had to speak to the question of how should an African American male deal with the police today. And ironically, I think one of your panelists, Judge John Gray, had to answer that same question over 20 years ago in the aftermath of the Rodney King incident. So even though I think in Kansas City the likelihood of that happening is much less, I think it's fairly ironic that over 20 years later, leaders in the community are still having to advise black males on how to interact with the police.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I don't think that we need to limit it to black males. I think that we need to just say minority people, period, because it happens to females as well. But the sad truth is that we still have the same tinderbox issues and problems today that we had in 1968 after Martin Luther King was assassinated, the civil rights movement, everything. We've made tremendous progress, and we've got many more partners in trying to do the right thing than we used to back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But we are by no means close to being a finished product in this country, this state, or this city.
Okay. I hope that helps, Jim.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to Dan from Olathe. Dan, you're on Up to Date with Mayor Sly James.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if increasing the number of minority police officers would help the issue of racism, I guess, of white officers to minority races, just by giving them more colleagues and realizing that, you know, there's, you know, you can trust them and everything like that, just by working with more people of color.
I think we're talking about the fact that that's easier said than done, increasing the number of minority police officers. But Mayor, go ahead.
Well, you know what? I've never seen a circumstance where people who don't generally know each other but have a lot of stereotypic ideas about each other and then are forced or come together in some sort of a prolonged engagement leave with those same stereotypic ideas. I think that good people of good hearts and minds, even though they may not understand people from different cultures, when they come together with those cultures, they're going to leave saying that they were better for having come together as opposed to not. Contact with others always lessens conflict with others. So to the extent we can add more people of more cultures and races to those important areas of safety that we have in the city, we're going to be better off. That's true of neighborhoods. Neighborhoods that have contact with different cultures are much more vibrant and better than neighborhoods that are totally segregated one race or another. We simply have to get over this color thing and recognize that stripped of color, if we're all cut, we're all going to bleed the same color. And frankly, we're all Americans, and we're all Kansas Citians. And we should be letting those types of similarities guide us as opposed to we're black Kansas Citians or Latino Kansas Citians. If we pull together on something we can all agree with, we're going to be better off.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go to Barbara from Kansas City, Missouri. Barbara, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a conversation. I'm a 60-year-old white female, And I had a conversation with my trainer, who is a mid-20s, lovely black woman. And we were just talking about Ferguson last week. And we were talking about when we've been stopped by the police. And I was stopped for speeding about a month ago. And the policeman just asked for my license, whatever. And she said that she was in Prairie Village recently, early in the morning, going to a client's house. And when she was stopped for going 6 miles an hour over the limit, the first thing he asked her was, "What are you doing here?" And when she told me that, I was just shocked, because I thought, why isn't there a standard, I assume if I'm stopped, there's a reason. And so to me, it seems as though when the policeman walks up, they should say, "Hi, did you know you were speeding?" Or, "Hi, the cause would be the thing that they would be addressing." And it seems that over all of this time that there would be a standard best practice question or approach that would alleviate that issue. I mean, because clearly if you're asking, "What are you doing here?" it's insightful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it just really disturbed me that, and what recourse would this young black woman have,
right,
to address that?
Right. Mayor, go ahead. Yeah.
There is no standard of practice or policy that is going to change the heart and the mind of an individual. If a police officer is suspicious of black people being in Prairie Village or Mission Hills or Overland Park or on the plaza, you can have all the policies and procedures you want. That's not going to stop them from being suspicious. And if they're suspicious, they're going to act like they suspect you of something simply by being there. That hasn't changed, and it's not going to. What needs to happen is that people coming into the police department are free of those types of suspicions as much as possible, and that the police department is training those types of suspicions out. I think that we could all do for some cultural sensitivity training on all sides of the line. It's something, everybody, "I don't want to do that." But you know what? Every time that there's been a program like that that I've been able to participate in, I've left feeling good and better about people I didn't know. So it happens all the time. Her recourse is to file a complaint. The problem is a complaint will probably go nowhere because it'll be her word versus the police officer. And the police officer will say, "Well, they were acting suspicious," and who's to say they weren't?
Janet from Kansas City, Missouri. Janet, you're on the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Mayor James, I am so proud of you, and I am so grateful for the work that you have done over the last few years. I live close to 75th and Troost, and one of the things, we moved in there in 2003, and I would be furious at the lack of services just across the street. And our block is thankfully very mixed, and it's been a wonderful experience. But what I really wanted to address was this idea of, could Ferguson happen here? Yes, Ferguson could happen here. I teach college. I teach 19 and 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds, and I encourage conversations about diversity, and my husband teaches philosophy, and he encourages conversations about diversity. And what has happened is that while our 20-somethings are much more aware of diversity and much more accepting, they don't always know how much disrespect still happens time after time after time. And I don't know that I have a question. All I know is that there's a lot of people working on this. One of the great things that's happening is the digital media thing that's over in the new. So there's a lot of us working to work kids together on both sides of town. And that, I think, is probably that's my question. Way
yeah.
to save the world.
Let me have Mayor James chime in here.
Well,
Janet, thank you.
I thank you very much for your kind words. We've been able to work with a number of different people, groups, and organizations to try to get some things done, and I'm honored to have that contact with them. I agree with you. I don't think that a lot of the younger kids are totally aware of the issues and the conflict, but they're not totally aware of the civil rights movement in Vietnam either.
Yeah.
They lack history. Mm-hmm. I feel blessed almost to have grown up in the 60s in an age of conflict during the civil rights movement, during the sexual revolution, during the Vietnam War, where there was conflict and you were darn near forced to talk about significant issues of the day. Now you're not. You're mm-hmm. only forced to tweet once or twice every 5 minutes and talk about absolutely yeah. nothing. Hey, I'm over at the coffee shop. Come join me.
Yeah.
There's not there. And I will also say this, and Steve, being an ex-newspaper guy, I seriously lament the loss of quality newspaper writers, investigative reporters, and newsprint in favor of bloggers who don't have to be bound by facts. They just say whatever yeah. the heck they want.
Yeah.
With a newspaper and what used to happen, there used to be long-term, in-depth investigations, and it became front-page conversation news in cities. That's not happening anymore. The other sad thing is that I am embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed, that there are people who die around this world to walk miles in the heat so that they can get their finger painted blue and vote. And we can't turn out more than 15-16% yeah. for an election in this city when all you have to do is get in your car, drive a couple of blocks, spend 10 minutes, and make a mark on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Until we start solving some of those problems, we're always going to have people who are ignorant about their circumstances and surroundings.
Mayor Sly James is our guest. Let me change the conversation a little bit, Mayor, but sure. But also some related questions. KCUR's community engagement team has been conducting a series of community listening sessions on the city's east side. We asked the team to give us some of the most pressing questions and issues that residents presented about their neighborhood so that we could ask you about them.
Sure.
Here's the first one. What is the city doing to erase Troost as a dividing line here in Kansas City?
We've made tremendous investments in and around Troost on both sides of Troost. In order to do that, we can start down at the north end in the Beacon Hill area with the UMKC Hospital Hill developments that are going on there, the new urban grocery store that'll go on there. We're going to expand the streetscape so that it's much more inviting, more lighting, so that people cross Troost back and forth.
Yeah.
Down further on Troost, we've made investments in the Bancroft School District with Make It Right, where that school has been totally renovated into senior housing, where utility bills are exceptionally low, and the apartments are really very neat.
Wow.
I wanted to move into one. I was told I didn't qualify, but it was a neat place.
Yeah.
Those types of things. We're going further. We have the Urban Neighborhood Initiative, that its boundary is Troost on one side and 71 on the other. That mm-hmm. extends down to UMKC. You know, I think that we ought to have streetcar on Troost. I think it would add to development. You know, we're doing as much as we possibly can. It's a long-term effort. On the other side of erasing that boundary, we have to do more about economic development, jobs. But my thing on the east side is we have to improve education. We absolutely, positively have to improve education.
Going back to our first topic today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, education is the seminal answer to a lot of these problems. The more educated you are, the less likely you are to be in poverty. The more educated you are, the less likely you are to be in jail. The more educated you are, the less likely you are to be sick and infirm and to die younger. All of those things tie to education. We ought to be focusing more on educating our kids, not just at an accredited level, at a world-class level. We need to set the bar higher. Our kids in the east side of Troost can achieve as much as any other kids, and it makes me mad as heck when I hear people say that our kids on the east side are not capable of competing with other kids. It's crazy and it's insulting.
Next question. What economic development efforts would you like to see? You just referred to this, you know, on the city's east side. And why aren't we seeing even more traction in that area?
In order to have a quality economic development program, you've got to have a quality economic development plan. And frankly, I've not seen any economic development plans that have come out that are able to be sustained at this stage, although we've entered into an agreement with Lynn Pro Corps, with Reverend Hartsfield Jr. to do some of those things and to examine those things. We have opportunities to develop the Linwood Shopping Center that needs to be done. Aldi's grocery store at 39th and Prospect was 10 years in the planning, and frankly, I had to call people into my office a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and say, this is ridiculous. Hmm. This needs to get done. Now it's done. We're doing other things. The East Patrol, the most expensive patrol station for the police department in the history of this city, wasn't haphazardly located at 26th and 27th and Prospect and extending over to Brooklyn, because it will change that entire neighborhood. So we have on the one end, look at it like a shopping center. We have on the one end the East Patrol District, which is going to have a community center, build a beautiful building, change the neighborhood. And then further down to Linwood and Prospect, the Linwood Shopping Center. And in the middle, new housing, new things going on. We need to do something to really build 18th and Vine. 18th and Vine is a great place, but it's unfinished. It's kind of like having a house, but you never have a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, we got to build on stuff that's there.
Let me ask you one last one with respect to our community engagement team. With respect to Kansas City's Ivanhoe neighborhood, which straddles Highway 71 from roughly 35th Street to 47th Street, what's your plan to bring much-needed money to help attract new residents to that neighborhood? The banks have been reticent about providing loans for home buyers and home improvement, so where can you go there?
Well, Ivanhoe is doing better than most neighborhoods in in the city, and that's a tribute to the consistent quality leadership and never give up attitudes. And they're building where the school was right there facing 71 at 39th. They're building a series of duplexes there. Banks have been reticent not just to go to Ivanhoe. Banks have been reticent to go into the African-American parts of the city. That's why you've got all these treacherous, felonious check cashing places that get 300-500% interest on money, and people never get out of debt. That's absolutely criminal. And well, I probably ought to leave on, but banks have been very reticent to go into that area. We need some banks to step up. No more lip service. They help contribute to the problem. They did some of the redlining. They did some of the lending redlining a long time ago. It's time for them to recognize their role in it and step up, and a lot of them have. Bank of America has been great in coming up with money for homes and home programs.
And Mayor, just very, very quickly, a very astute political writer in town just noted in his column Saturday that you might be picking up an opponent for re-election. Former Councilman Dan Coffern is saying he's very likely to run next year. What's your reaction to his interest?
I welcome the challenge.
Just that simple.
Just that simple. I'll let my record stand on its own. We've been involved in early childhood education more than any other administration in this entire city, including the one that he was a part of when he was a councilman. Crime, homicides are down much more than they were when he was a councilman. We have done a lot in terms of continuing to build on downtown Kansas City. We have a downtown starter line streetcar. Economic development is moving. Bingo, bango. I'll stand on what we've done, and I'm ready for the challenge.
That's Mayor Sly James. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about the new production of Our Town at the Kansas City Rep. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.